I first met Paul Edward Farmer 2 weeks before Christmas 1994. I was in Haiti as a journalist, writing about the presence of 20,000 American soldiers there. The soldiers' job was to reinstate the country's democratically elected government, in the process stripping power from the junta, a government composed of military leaders whose corrupt and cruel reign had gone on for 3 years. The evening I met Farmer, I was sitting on a second-story balcony of a military outpost, talking with U.S. Army Special Forces Captain John Carroll. The compound was a desperate-looking place. Concrete walls enclosed a weed-dotted parade field, a jail, and a mustard-colored barracks. The captain was stationed with 8 American soldiers in Haiti's rural central plateau, charged with keeping the peace for 150,000 Haitians, mostly peasants, spread over 1,000 square miles. The task seemed daunting, if not impossible. The grisly murder of a popular local official, the assistant mayor, had been beheaded, and his body tossed in the Artibonite River, was making life even more complicated for Captain Carroll. The suspect most locals considered the killer was a member of the junta. He had been captured and briefly detained by the captain, only to be released by him for lack of physical evidence and reliable witnesses. Carroll was shaking his head in frustration about the crime and about all the challenges of peacekeeping when an aide appeared and told him an American was waiting at the compound gate to see him. There were, in fact, 5 visitors, 4 of them Haitian, but my gaze lingered on a tall, lanky white man in his mid-30s as the group joined us on the balcony. The American introduced himself as Paul Farmer, a doctor who worked in a hospital in a nearby town called Mirabalé, helping poor people. Farmer had short black hair and a high waist and thin, long arms. His nose came almost to a point, upon which rested a pair of rimless glasses. Despite his pale and even delicate appearance, especially compared to the tanned and muscular Special Forces captain, there was something undeniably confident, even cocky, about him. Farmer asked the captain if anyone in the compound needed medical attention. Carroll advised him that he had some sick prisoners the local hospital refused to treat, so he had ended up buying the medicine himself. Farmer flashed a smile. "You'll spend less time in purgatory," he replied. Then he asked, "Who cut off the head of the assistant mayor?" The conversation between the captain and the doctor went in circles. Carroll insisted he couldn't be sure, but Farmer said that everyone in the region had a very clear idea who the killer was. I sensed that the doctor knew Haiti far better than the captain, and that he was trying to give him some important information. He suggested the murder suspect be arrested again, and this time held indefinitely. This was the practical thing to do, he hinted, to imprison the man rather than risk the anger of Haitians who were starting to lose confidence in Captain Carroll's leadership. Farmer seemed to care less about the notion that someone should be considered innocent until proven guilty than about preserving a thin-edged calm in a jittery country. I found the two men's views ironic. The captain, who described himself as a redneck, was arguing for due process. Farmer, who championed human rights and clearly was on the side of the poor, was arguing against it. The captain couldn't hide his overall pessimism. "No matter what he did or didn't do about the murder suspect," he said, "nothing was going to change Haiti in the long term." The United States Army had ventured here before, in the early 20th century, to restore order during another period of turmoil, only to leave and watch from a distance as the new government eventually collapsed. The same thing was going to happen when the Army left this time, he predicted. Haiti would always be a desperately poor, corrupt, broken society. No one could fix it.